Okay, then, Friday, 5 p.m., the last Friday of the year. How about that?
Here we are.
Said we made it through another one. Usually when I say that, I mean the week. It's been an interesting 2019, let me tell you. And we started a new series just last week, which is really, I am in my ballywick now. I am just, this is like more or less the topic that I was made to do radio for, it seems. Since I've started doing this here at the station, maybe 20-some-odd years ago, I really don't even know anymore. I've lost track a long time ago. But it all came about when I wrote a book called American Hit Radio. Brought me on the air as a guest at first and eventually ended up with my own program. It was kind of a strange series of events that how things unfolded that way. And I love it here. I love it at WHPC. It's such a fabulous home, and it's given me a fabulous opportunity to talk about music. But it started with my book, American Hit Radio. And in the beginning, that was more or less what the show was based on. Well, since then, we've evolved into the Wednesday show, which is the alternative top 40 and the top 500 of the top 40, where we're playing albums chronologically through time. And that's a big series. That's 1,000 albums. That's 20 years worth of programming right there if we do that and keep going. So that takes up my Wednesdays now, because that was a theme that we had struck on. Fridays has been all about how music changed, where we came up with all of these different topics that we cover in depth. So if you were listening a year ago, you were probably hearing us talk about The Who week after week after week until we basically ran out of Who material to talk about. And then we moved on to the next topic. The previous one was what we called Radio Days, where we covered AM radio from the 20s right up until 1954. But this series we're calling American Hit Radio, Transistor Days. It's essentially based on my book, the first part of the book, because we get, since the last series ended in 1954, we're picking up where that left off. Now, last week with the very first show in this series, the American Hit Radio series, Transistor Days, we discussed the first half of 1955. And there were some high, you know, there were some high points, but it was a bit of a tough show, to be honest, to start off a topic. Any show where you play four different versions of The Ballad of Davy Crockett, you got to pray that your audience is with you when you do stuff like that. But the point was simple. We wanted to convey what it was like in 1955 and just how rare the good stuff was. If we just played three great songs and or 10 songs or whatever in a row, and you didn't get the feeling for the times, I don't think we'd be doing our job. I think the special thing about this is conveying just how things changed, like the series is about how music changed. So this is part two. And here we're going to be covering the second half of 1955, exactly where we left off last week. So as the year progressed, so did the advancement of rock and roll as a viable popular style. What started with a few doo-wop recordings, which we heard last week, songs like Earth Angel and Sincerely, and maybe Jump Blues by Bill Haley and the Comets, of course, Rock Around the Clock, started a wave which would very quickly become a tsunami. The copycat artists who were stealing a lot of the rightful sales and artistic credit from the black artists were still doing incredibly well, but with people like Fats Domino, Chuck Berry, and Little Richard all suddenly appearing on the scene, there was less and less room for the copycats, and those who were actively trying to, quote-unquote, protect American culture from the barbarian hordes had, you could say they were soon to learn that they were fighting a losing battle. So let's pick up where we left off. The first track that I want to play today is from a New Orleans artist. Started in New Orleans. Now, this is the very early parts of rock and roll. This guy was around since 1948. Been having big R&B hits since he put out a song called The Fat Man. And he was doing great on the R&B charts. Never really appeared on the pop charts. Well, rhythm and blues artists were beginning to pull back at the reins that confined them to the race charts, as they were called. More importantly, though, the white middle class began to pay attention in some cases. In 1955, minorities accounted for less than 10% of record sales. In other words, most buyers were white. And most of them preferred to buy what was familiar. In other words, white. So this is the way it was. And this is why last week's show had the sound, the overall sound that it did. But a teenage-based counterculture was taking root with musical tastes far more adventurous than its mainstream counterpart. It was this audience that finally put Fats Domino squarely at the center of popular music. The song, Ain't That a Shame, wasn't Fats Domino's first hit recording, as I said, but it was the first to substantially dent the popular charts. The lyrics didn't have any vulgar connotations, like a lot of the R&B that was being kept off of the mainstream did, and his delivery was unthreatening to suspicious white record buyers. Little Richard and Chuck Berry would have the responsibility of confronting those barriers. However, it's more than likely then that the burgeoning youth culture combined with a number of mainstream record buyers to finally put rhythm and blues, or by this point in time, you might want to call it rock and roll, on the popular music charts. Here is Fats Domino on 90.3 WHBC.
You made me cry when you said goodbye. Ain't that a shame? My tears fell like rain. Ain't that a shame? You're the one to blame. You broke my heart when you said we'll part. Ain't that a shame? My tears fell like rain. Ain't that a shame? You're the one to blame. Oh, well, goodbye. Although I'll cry. Ain't that a shame? My tears fell like rain. Ain't that a shame? You're the one to blame. You said goodbye. Ain't that a shame? My tears fell like rain. Ain't that a shame? You're the one to blame. Oh, well, goodbye. Although I'll cry. Ain't that a shame? Tears fell like rain. Ain't that a shame? You're the one to blame.
Fantastic change of pace right there. Fats Domino really mixing things up for the popular radio charts. Now, that was a hit hit the top 40 in July of 1955, and it went to number 10. It became a top 10 single on the pop charts. That's huge. Incredibly huge. This is a big deal. That you can really see that things are changing. But then again, in the exact same month, July 1955, a guy named Pat Boone pretty much set the stage for what his whole early part of his career was about when he decided to re-record the song, specifically aiming it at the white American record buyer. He was safe, wholesome, advertiser-friendly, Fats was cool. There was nothing at all wrong with Fats, but Pat Boone was safer. And guess what happens? His version goes to number one.
Of course it did.
Compare them back to back. Get used to it, folks. This will be today's lesson. Pat Boone is the inadvertent star of today's show on 90.3 WHPC. Here's Pat Boone with Ain't That a Shame.
You made me cry when you said goodbye. Ain't that a shame? My tears fell like rain. Ain't that a shame? You're the one to blame. You broke my heart when you said we'll part. Ain't that a shame? My tears fell like rain. Ain't that a shame? You're the one to blame. Farewell, goodbye.
I know today you hear those two versions back to back and you have got to think to yourself, are you kidding? Like, really? But yeah, Pat Boone's version was the number one version of the song. And Fats Domino was grateful to be in the top 10 because that was a whole new charting experience for R&B artists. Now, it was not easy for rock and rollers, is my ultimate point, because you're going to have to hear what they were competing with. And I've got the perfect person and maybe the perfect song to show exactly how much rock and roll artists had to put up with and fight against in order to basically make the inroads enough to make rock and roll stick. You got at this point in time, this is absolutely a weird trend that is totally despicable to just about everybody except for the few kids that are getting it and buying it and beginning to scare their parents. It really is figuring that this is going to go away in 2 or 3 months. And the guy who was single-handedly in charge of trying to make sure that that's exactly what happened was Mitch Miller. He was an American oboist, a very talented oboist, did a tremendous amount of work with classical artists. And I wish that that's where he kept his talents. He was a conductor, a record producer, a record industry executive. Mostly he was an A&R guy, an artist and repertoire guy. He was the head of A&R at Columbia Records for the longest time. And he ended up becoming one of their best-selling recording artists as well. Rather incredible. This is the guy who at one point was playing oboe with Charlie Parker on an album called Charlie Parker with Strings. It was Mitch Miller who was the only other soloist on the sessions with Charlie Parker, if you could believe that. But he started as a classical music producer on Mercury Records, but then joined Columbia in the same capacity. And then he started to define the Columbia style by bringing in people like Johnny Ray, Percy Faith, Ray Conniff, Johnny Mathis, Guy Mitchell, Patti Page, Dinah Shore, Doris Day. These are not rock and roll
names.
But
now you know where his tastes lie.
Exactly. He disapproved of rock and roll. He once made a speech about it, denouncing it, and it was called, quote unquote, the Gettysburg Address of Music. This is the guy that passed on signing Elvis Presley, passed on signing Buddy Holiday, had a chance at signing the Beatles, passed on them. It wasn't until 1958, 3 years in the future, when he realized that rock and roll railroaded itself right over him. And then finally, he broke down and he would sign people like Johnny Cash and Carl Perkins. But his quote, one of them is, rock and roll is musical baby food. It is the worship of mediocrity brought about by a passion for conformity. Now, if that's true, what he said, then why would he record and release this? One thing that he did was he recorded all of these records, the Sing Along with Mitch, I think it was a TV show that he had at the time, and he would release singles of a bunch of people just singing in unison to stupid songs. And he'd release them, and what would happen? The damn thing went to number one. Mitch Miller released The Yellow Rose of Texas as one of his Sing Along with the Mitch things in the middle of this birth of rock and roll. It's just cracking out of the egg. And this song by Mitch Miller goes to number one on 90.3 WHBC. Hey, don't blame me. I'm only the delivery boy. Pop charts in the summer of 1955 and crawled all the way up to number one. Heidi was saying something about payola, but that's exactly what it wasn't. The reason, one of the reasons Mitch Miller hated rock and roll is he feared it. He knew that there were scandals going on with a lot of DJs taking payola and such, and Mitch Miller attributed its fame to that. Mm-hmm. And he said, I will never sign a rock and roll artist because when those other people go down with the investigations, we won't be touched. We're going to be clean because we're not going to touch rock and roll. He was a producer, and somehow his productions were successful. Number one record for sales. Just
unbelievable.
Now, at the same time, released in the exact same month as that song, is a song called Maybelline. Maybelline is to rock and roll what Adam and Eve are to the Bible. Sure, rock and roll style songs predate it, but they were all hybrids. I mean, rock and roll around the clock was Western swing melded with rhythm and blues. Ain't That a Shame is a rhythm and blues song disguised as a rock and roll song. What Maybelline says essentially is, it all starts here. It's hard to overestimate just how influential Chuck Berry was. The first guitarist singer to reach the charts in rock and roll. He was also a songwriter performer, something relatively uncommon in 1955. He was the first rock and roll artist to write words that were relevant and entertaining to his young white audience without alienating his core black audience. And finally, he achieved all of this with a driving rock and roll rhythm that was, if not brand new, certainly unique enough to be instantly recognizable. For these reasons, Chuck Berry, more than any other artist, is responsible for the direction of the popular music that followed. Maybelline was his first single, and from then on, the pop charts were permanently altered. The recording of Maybelline wasn't an accident at all, but a deliberate attempt at musical alchemy. We talked last week about Sam Phillips at Sun Records. He was busy trying to find a white singer who sounded like a black man. Well, Chuck Berry, a black man, was endeavoring to write music that would appeal to the white kids who preferred Pat Boone to Fats Domino. Chuck saw the problem and realized that maybe he could fix it. When performing, he made sure to enunciate his words carefully, singing outside the standard of the blues realm into improvised lyrics that caused his audience to pay closer attention and to listen harder. One night he saw Muddy Waters playing, and Muddy Waters suggested that he should go see Leonard Chess at Chess Records. Well, Chess hires, signs Chuck Berry, and he brought in a song called Ida Red, which they immediately said, you know, that's not a good title. Let's change the name to Maybelline. So he did, at the suggestion of Leonard Chess. 36 takes it took for them to figure this out, from Ida Red, Maybelline, changing the tempo. It got a little bit quicker as they went on. And then to help the song get airplay, 2/3 of the writing credits were given to Alan Freed and his associate, Russ Fredo. There you go. There's your payola. Exactly what Mitch Miller was talking about. But Chuck Berry was unaware of this until the song was published and released. And I'm sure he wasn't happy about it, but the fact is, that is what got the record airplay. And in retrospect, can anybody say that the reason that Mitch Miller's song went to number one and Chuck Berry's song went to number five is because Mitch Miller's song was better? I don't think payola had anything to do with it, do you? 90.3 WHPC. Here's some rock and roll for you by Chuck Berry.
Maybelline, why can't you be true? Oh, Maybelline, why can't you be true? You done started doing the things you used to do. As I was motivating over the hill, I saw Maybelline in a coupe de ville. A Cadillac rolling on an open road, nothing out run my V8 4. A Cadillac doing about 95, moves bumper to bumper, rolling side to side. Maybelline, why can't you be true? Oh, Maybelline, why can't you be true? You done started back doing the things you used to do. A Cadillac pulled up to 104, my Ford got a hot and wouldn't do no more. Gun got cloud and started to rain. I tooted my horn for the passing lane. My rainwater blowing all under my hood. I knew that I was doing my motor good. Maybelline, why can't you be true? Oh, Maybelline, why can't you be true? You done started back doing the thing you used to do.
hate you, be true. You done started back doing the thing you used to do. Motor cooled down, the heat went down, and that's when I heard that highway sound. Cadillac setting like a ton of lead, 110 a half a mile ahead. Cadillac looking like a setting still, and I caught Maybelline at the top of the hill. Maybelline, why can't you be true? Oh, Maybelline, why can't you be true? You done started back doing the thing you used to do.
Gumdrop, 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 gumdrop. In the candy shop around the corner, I met a little gal and she's a goner. I looked at her, she looked at me. I stole a kiss and knew my heart starts beating.
Gumdrop, gumdrop,
lips kept repeating.
Gumdrop, gumdrop, looks so fine, makes you know she's mine. Gumdrop, gumdrop.
She's the peaches and cream, Candyman's dream. Puts me on a cloud, makes me holler out loud. Gumdrop, gumdrop, oh, 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 oh. Gumdrop, gumdrop, oh, 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 oh. Gumdrop, gumdrop, so good, so good. Care about the money I spent for the presents I buy. She just wants a honey.
Oh, 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 oh. Gumdrop, gumdrop. Oh, 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 oh. Gumdrop, gumdrop. So good, so good.
All right, maybe I'm picking on them, but that is the Crew Cuts again. We played them twice in the past couple of shows anyway, maybe once last week and once the week before, as being one of the, like a Pat Boone sort of a band that would pick up tracks from other people. That came out the same month as Maybelline, was in the top 10 at the exact same time as Maybelline. And that's what Chuck Berry was, that's his competition. A lot of this, you can look at the labels. You look at a thing like Ain't It a Shame by Fats Domino and Maybelline being on regional record labels, independent labels, you know, Chess and such. And while this other stuff is from Columbia, and A Gumdrop was on Mercury Records, which was doing a little bit more toward, I mean, they played the Crew Cuts. I guess they consider that to be rock and roll. But a little bit more than, say, labels like Columbia, but it was the local independent labels that were really the home for rock and roll that would allow it to hit. But every now and then things change. Like with Mercury, one band that was signed there was the Platters. It kind of made sense because they were like a bridge between, say, the old, like we did in our last series, the whole Tin Pan Alley stuff, like Ink Spots and such. Between that and doo-wop, the Platters fit right in the middle of that seesaw. because then they had this incredible lead vocalist named Tony Williams. They were also one of the only, if you could call them a doo-wop group, the only ones that had a female vocalist named Zola Taylor. For a time, they were considered the most successful vocal group in the world. They had a music entrepreneur, manager, and songwriter named Buck Ram to coach them and started writing hits for them. And they wrote this one song when they were on the Federal label before they got signed to Mercury called Only You and You Alone that was written by Buck Ram. He wrote it for the Ink Spots, but it was deemed unreleasable by Federal. They just the band themselves said that they didn't think they recorded it very well. Well, then they get signed to Mercury, and Ram thought that they should record it again, and they went back to record the song. What's rather funny about it is that the band was trying to rehearse it, a new version for the song, when they were driving in a car. And one of the singers, the bass singer named Herb Reed, this is his story. We tried it so many times and it was terrible. One time we were rehearsing in the car and the car jerked or hit a bump. And Tony went, oh! And they laughed about it, thought it was funny. And then they realized that they landed on a hook. They recorded it that way and the song became huge. Number 5 hit for the Platters that started a streak of incredible gold for them. Here is Tony Williams and the Platters performing Only You.
Only you can to make all this world seem right. Darkness bright. Only you and you alone can thrill me like you do and fill my heart with love for only destiny. When you hold my hand, I understand the magic that you do. You're my dream come true, my one and only you. Only you in me. For it's true, you are my destiny. When you hold my hand, I understand the magic that you do.
That version, the second version they recorded, hit the pop charts in October of 1955 and went to number 5. Again, more or less unifying rock and roll and doo-wop as being very much in a family. Sort of fighting the same battle together, wouldn't you say? With what they were up against with the pop chart, with
yes.
The pop songs. This next song is rather, this cracks me up because they were originally called Perkle Lee and the Five Stars. The lead singer was named Perkle Lee Moses Jr. And it's not a very likely name for a pop star. Luckily, at some point somewhere when they got signed to VJ Records, they figured that maybe it would be smart to change their name. and they became the El Dorados. They released a couple of songs. None of them went too far, but then they hit on this one. And although VJ, again, notice a very small independent label, a label that actually ended up with the rights to the Beatles before they were popular, if you remember that. This is 5 years before that point in time, maybe six or so. What am I talking about? It's almost 10. Well, yeah, 8 years at least.
Get your math straight.
It's hard to get all those years down. But back in 1957, VJ had the El Dorados, and they released this song that hit the charts in October of 1955 as well and went to number 17 on the pop charts. On 90.3 WHPC, here's At My Front Door.
Crazy little mama come knocking, brother, knocking at my front door, door, door. Crazy little mama come knocking, knocking at my front door. Door, crazy little mama come knock, knock, knocking just like she did before. I woke up this morning with a feeling of despair, looking for my baby and she wasn't there. Heard someone knocking, much to my surprise, there stood my baby looking in my eyes. Crazy little mama come knock, knock, knocking just like she did before. If you got a little mama and you wanna keep her neat, keep your little mama off my street. Same thing will happen like it did before. She come knock, knock, knocking at my door. Crazy little mama come knock, knock, knocking just like she did before. Crazy little mama come knocking, brother, knocking at my front door, door, door. Crazy little mama come knocking, knocking at my front door. Crazy little mama come knock, knock, knocking just like she did before. Same thing will happen like it did before. She come knock, knock, knocking at my door. Crazy little mama come knock, knock, knocking just like she did before. Crazy little mama come knock, knock, knocking just like she did before.
Crazy little mama come knocking, knocking at my front door, door, door. Crazy little mama come knocking, knocking at my front door. Crazy little mama come knock, knock, knocking just like she did before. I woke up this morning with a feeling of despair. I telephoned the baby, but she wasn't there. Heard someone knocking, and much to my surprise, there stood my baby looking in my eyes. Crazy little mama come knock, knock, knocking just like she did before. If you got a little mama and you want to get along, teach your little mama right from wrong. Tell her that you love her like you did before. She'll come knock, knock, knocking at your door. Crazy little mama come knock, knock, knocking just like she did before. Crazy little mama come knocking, knocking at my front door, door, door. Crazy little mama come knocking, knocking at my front door. Crazy little mama come knock, knock, knocking just like she did before.
Bop, bop, boodily bop, 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 boodily bop. You wanna get along,
teach your little mama right from wrong.
And if you tell her that you love her like you did before she come,
knock, knock, knocking
at my door.
Crazy little mama, knock, knock, knocking just like she did before. Crazy little mama, come knock, knock, knocking just like she did before.
Just like she did before.
I guess the original version was a little too dirty for Pat Boone. Had to clean that one up a bit. Back-to-back versions of At My Front Door, you heard the band that wrote it, the Eldorados, performing it. They went to number 17 with their version. Pat Boone went to number 7. He must have been disappointed that he didn't get a number 1 hit out of it. Now, meanwhile, the Platters have just come off of the biggest song of their career with Only You and You Alone. So Buck Graham, their manager and songwriter, trying to come up with something. And he said he was in the Flamingo Hotel, and he was in the washroom. I don't know why he was happened to be in the bathroom, basically, of the Flamingo Hotel at this time when the idea for a song struck him.
Sometimes you got to go.
It's just what it, right, just what it was. I mean, that's where it came to him. So he said he wrote this song in 20 minutes, brought it to the band, they rehearsed it, and it became the first number one hit for the Platters. I think you know it. It's called The Great Pretender on 90.3 WHPC.
Oh, yes, I'm the great pretender. One can tell. Oh, yes, I'm the great pretender. Adrift in a world of my own, I play the game, but to my real shame, you've left me to dream all alone. Can't conceal. Oh, yes, I'm the great pretender. Just laughing and gay like a clown. I seem to be what I'm not. You see, I'm wearing my heart like a crown. You're still around. Too real is this feeling of make-believe. Too real when I feel what my heart can't conceal. Yes, I'm the great pretender. Just laughing and gay like a clown. Like a crown, pretending that you're still around.
Still around.
My arms around you, know that much.
This is me extending my dislike for the Crew Cuts onto another band where some of their members actually became members of the Crew Cuts. That group was called The Four Lads. If you remember last week, I said anybody band that calls themselves The Four anything be very suspect, with the exception of The Four Tops. They had hits with Moments to Remember, Standing on the Corner. Another Toronto group. They called themselves The Otnarots at first, Toronto backward. All right. Let's see. A big hit for the end of 1955, went to an actress named Julie London. She had a huge hit with a very good song called Cry Me a River on 90.3 WHPC.
Cry the long night through. Well, you can cry me a river, cry me a river. I cried a river over you. Being so untrue. Well, you can cry me a river, cry me a river. I cried a river over you. You drove me, nearly drove me out of my head, while you never shed a tear. Remember, I remember all that you said. Told me love was too plebeian. Told me you were through with me. And now you say you love me. Just to prove you do, come. cry me a river, cry me a river. I cried a river over you.
With Cry Me a River. That song was originally written for Ella Fitzgerald, interestingly enough, but she got a spot in the film The Girl Can't Help It, which obviously gave it a bit of a boost. Now, one track, two versions. Wop bop a loobop, a wop bam boom. Is that onomatopoeia for wham bam thank you ma'am? If it is, then it's a dirty song. If it isn't, it's just insane nonsense. But I wish I could have a dollar for every button that kids popped off of their pajamas while jumping up and down on their beds, singing along with Little Richard. Background. He left home with a traveling minstrel show when he was a little kid. Crazy antics and wild style. He constantly drew attention to himself. Being gay kind of made him a bit unusual as well at the time. But he was eventually offered a contract with RCA Records and recorded a minor local hit called Every Hour. A local musician named Escarita sort of adopted him, took him under his wing, taught him how to play a little bit of piano. And in the winter of 1958, though, Little Richard's father was murdered. So he ended up having to take a job washing dishes at the local Greyhound bus station. RCA lost interest in him, dropped him, but he remained musically active, and he was really trying to get a band together. His next band he called the Upsetters, and they recorded a demo, and they sent it off to Art Rupee of Specialty Records. The demo was anything but spectacular. It wasn't really that good at all, and Rupee just let time pass. But Little Richard was relentless, calling the label like every day, and eventually Rupee broke down and decided to take a chance. He arranged for a recording session, but intelligently he said, I'm going to send him to New Orleans, J&M Studios, which was owned by Cosimo Matassa. Home studio of Fats Domino and Lloyd Price. Bumps Blackwell was, for lack of a better title, the artistic supervisor at Specialty Records, so it was his responsibility to meet Little Richard and record the session. Blackwell didn't have any more luck, though, than anybody else, and eventually the session shut down. And they ended up retiring to the Dew Drop Inn. Now, there's a couple of people hanging out in the Dew Drop Inn with this old upright piano, and Little Richard started to go nuts and became a ham. He started playing like crazy, singing loud and lewd, and he made up this song called Wop Bop A Loo Bop A Wop Bam Boom Tootie Fruity Good Booty. Well, they knew that they couldn't do that. So they ended up calling up a local girl called Dorothy Labastri and asked her to clean up the lyric. They went back into the studio, and an entirely new rock and roll star was born. This time we're going to turn the tables, though, and we're going to let Pat Boone get his ridiculous version in first before we go to Little Richard. Take care, everybody. Hope you enjoyed the show. We'll see you next Friday.
Tootie fruity, all Rudy. 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 A bop bop a loo mop a lop bop bop. I got a gal, her name's Sue. She knows just what to do. I got a gal, her name's Sue. She knows just what to do. I've been to the east, I've been to the west, but she's the gal that I love best. Tootie fruity, all Rudy. Tootie fruity, all Rudy. Woo, tootie fruity, all Rudy. Tootie fruity, all Rudy. Tootie fruity, all Rudy. A wop bop a loo mop a lop bop bop. I got a gal, her name's Daisy. She almost drives me crazy. I got a gal, her name's Daisy. She almost drives me crazy. She's a real gone cookie, yes siree. But pretty little Susie is the gal for me. Tootie fruity, all Rudy. Tootie fruity, all Rudy. Ooh, tootie fruity, all Rudy. Tootie fruity, all Rudy. Tootie fruity, all Rudy. A bop bop a loo mop a lop bop bop. Thank you. oh Rudy, tutti frutti, oh Rudy, tutti frutti, oh Rudy.
She rock to the west, but she's the gal that I love best. Tootie fruity, oh Rudy. 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 But wop bop loom bop lump bop bop. I got a gal named Daisy. She almost drives me crazy. Got a gal named Daisy. She almost drives me crazy. She knows how to love me, yes indeed. Boy, you don't know what she do to me. Tootie fruity, oh Rudy. 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 Bop, bop, bop. Bam!